Hey, we're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
Hi. How are you? Are you good? Hey, my name is Rob, and I thought maybe we could start out with me talking just with confession. Like, if I just, so I brought a candle, because that seems like something you do when you confess something in front of a large group of people. So are we cool with that? I know what some of you might be thinking. You might be thinking, whoa, dude, you're not going to pass that candle to me because I ain't saying something in front of all these people. No, nothing like that. It's just, I just need to get some things off my chest. So, is that cool? Is that good? Okay, so I'm going to light my candle, because mama, I'm so hard to handle. Yeah, I'll get some around. Mm-hmm. And nothing like a little black crows to help the mood. All right, so here's the thing. I'm sorry, I'm a little nervous. I'm shaking. It's very hard to confess like this in front of people. I'm spitting, it's bad. Okay, here's the thing. I have a really difficult time in relationships. Yeah. For me, relationships are very hard. And I don't know why. Like, why can't they just be easier? I mean, it's like, anybody know what I'm talking about? Like, why do they have to be so hard? Like, okay, so for example, like, I have a wife. And look, I love my wife. 18 years in like less than 2 weeks. That's what I'm saying. It's good. And you should applaud for that. 18 years? Come on. So you fell for it. And so I love my wife. But here's the thing, man. She is smart. She's savvy. She's vibrant. She's like, she shocks me in totally good ways. It's really cool. I love the thing we have going. But man, it's hard to be married to her. I mean, I'm serious. This marriage is hard, and she's great, but it's still hard. Okay, I guess what I should probably confess something else. When I say that I wish that my relationships were easier, what I really mean is that I just want everybody to do what I want whenever I want. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, why is that so hard? Like, if my wife could just do whatever I want whenever I want, man, our marriage would be copacetic. I mean, it would be like, we wouldn't have any friction, at least not me, right? Like, why can't it be like that? Why can't I? Isn't that the truth? I just kind of want my relationships to be easy. I just want people to do what I want whenever I want. Like, I have kids. I do, and they're great. I got a son. He's 17. He's awesome. I got a daughter. He's 12. She's great. But somewhere along the line, and it was real early on, they figured out that they were free will moral agents of their own. Like, what's up with that? Why couldn't I get more time with them just doing whatever I wanted whenever I wanted? You know, like, why is it the first word they learn is no? You know what I'm saying? So why does it have to be so hard? And coworkers, man, don't even get me started. You know what I mean? And friends, and it's horrible. It's so hard. And I guess I should confess this too. If I'm being honest, this type of thinking has really hurt my relationship with God. Because I found that my relationship with God is a lot like it is with people. I just can't get them to do whatever I want whenever I want them to do it. Are you listening? It would sure be a lot easier. This whole faith thing would be no trouble if God just did whatever I wanted whenever I wanted. But he doesn't. He's like every other person I've ever met. I can't get them on the same page as me. And it's, so that's what confession there. I love the smell. I'm sorry. I was about to go to my happy place. You almost lost me. All right. So hey, we've been in this series called Crappy Love Songs. The entire premise being that there is this moment in a relationship. It could be something chemical, romantically. It could be something that draws you to somebody. It could be just a friendship. It could be other relationships. But there's something that draws you to people. And there is a moment in the relationship where it feels easy. It feels like, oh my gosh, they get me. And I get them, and it feels easy. But if you give that relationship enough time and distance, it gets hard. Because sooner or later, the friction starts and people aren't on the same page and things start happening and the rifts get divided. And it all happened. And so today, we're sort of parting ways with the romantic angle. We're leaving the romantic realm and we're going to talk a little bit about, what about friendship? What about just regular relationships that you have with people? Because we need those. We were made to crave community. I mean, we weren't designed to live like hermits. I mean, we want to be in community with each other, but we drive each other nuts. I mean, don't we? I mean, we just do. And like, there's tons of friend songs like this. So what happens in that stage when the song is like, oh, that's our friendship. So cool. But then something happens and it creates a rift. So there's tons of friend songs like this, like we just had one playing. Keep smiling, keep shining. Makes you want to get the lighter out. I can't. No, and you can always count on me. Mm-hmm. For sure. That's what friends are for. Gag me, right? When does it get to the point where you want to puke, right? Because that's what happens in our relationships. They go from like easy and, oh, God, that song is beautiful, to cheesy. Like, oh, that song is so cheesy. I hate it. It makes me want to throw up. Something happens there. And there's other songs like it. There's like that one, you got a friend in me. You got a friend in me when the road is up ahead and you're miles and miles when your eyes are on bed. You just remember what your old pal said. Remember that? That was pretty good, Randy Newman, actually. And, so, you know, that's there. And then there's that other, thank you for being a friend. Boo-doo-boo-boo. Travel down the road and back again. There's a lot of roads in friend songs. Have you ever noticed that? A lot of mileage, a lot of roads. Yeah. And then there's, of course, the classic. You know it. Lean on me when you're not strong. Come on. And I'll be your friend. Come on. And I'll help you carry on. For I said it won't be long till I'm gonna need somebody to lean on. Just call on me, bro. Oh, never mind. Sorry. Let's keep going. But what happens in the relationship stage when it's like, hey, man, I'm always letting people lean on me. But when I need somebody to lean on, where's everybody? Like, what happens in that? And the thing is, you know, if we're just being honest, maybe you would be as honest as I'm trying to be, which is, we just want easy relationships, and relationships are not easy. Because at the heart of it is what we want is we just want everybody to do whatever we want. But everybody can't get that, right? That'll lead to some tension. I remember we had a new couple that moved in when we were back in the East Coast, kind of catty to us, so across the street and catty-cornered us, and they were great, man. We really hit it off. Shala really enjoyed the company of the woman in the couple. I liked the guy, man. We hit it off. We had similar sense of humor. I could make jokes without him looking at me going, aren't you a pastor? You know what I mean? So that's important. And so it was great. And I remember saying to my wife one day, I said, Shala, man, I love that guy, man. It's just easy to hang out with him. That relationship just is easy. He gets me, man. We have similar sense of humor. We have similar passions. Oh, it's great. It's a great relationship. Do you know that in 2 years, we were no longer on speaking terms with that couple? Because they were in the midst of a divorce and they didn't like the stance that we took. And that decision alone just created great friction and my buddy would no longer even speak to me. Just 2 years later. And that's what happens in relationships. Because the truth is, if we're being honest, and isn't this true? People are just difficult. I mean, isn't that right? I mean, we're all just difficult beings. Because we're all living this sort of angst-ridden life. We know we just want people to do what we want. People don't do that. We get friction involved. And people are just tough. And that is what makes the teaching of Jesus that we're going to talk about today so incredibly difficult in and of itself. Because Jesus spoke to the matter. I mean, Jesus was savvy enough. He knew that there is going to be relational tension in your life. But there is a way to handle it. And there is something really, it's actually staggeringly beautiful, the words that he shares. Because it's like, is that possible? Because what Jesus does is he frames this thing up where it's like, he suggests actually that there can be relational strife. There can be turmoil in a relationship. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the relationship must be terminated. Did you get that? That you could exist with other humans in such a way that you could have friction and turmoil and the relationship needs not to be terminated. It could actually grow as a result and thrive even more. So if you're somebody here who's pursuing Jesus, if you're a Christian and you say, yeah, I'm following Jesus, then these words are going to be startling to us, because there's some startling things in the passage that really make us rethink maybe how we've conducted ourselves relationally. If you're not a Christian and you're here today, first, welcome. We're glad you're here. And second, I would think that this type of framework that Jesus suggests would be extremely intriguing. Could it be possible that we could live with humans in such a way that when there's tension and strife, it doesn't kill the relationship? The relationship can not only survive it, but could actually grow as a result. It's an incredible idea. So what we're going to do is we're going to open the Bible and we're going to turn to the book of Matthew. If you have a Bible, you can turn to the book of Matthew with me. Of course, if you don't own a Bible, we give them away for free right back at the Velcro bar. So just pick one up. If you do have a Bible, you can turn to Matthew chapter 18, where I will be reading a few verses here where Jesus talks, that he's giving to his disciples, his followers. And this is what it says. Should be behind me. Right? There you go. If your brother, and brother here is inclusive, it would be like if your brother or sister. If your brother or sister sins against you, go and show him his fault, just between the two of you. If he listens to you, you have won your brother over. But if you will not listen, take one or two others along, so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church, and if he refuses to listen even to the church, treat him as you would a pagan or a tax collector. So that's where we're going to start. And so here's the thing about Jesus. Jesus is a master of words. He is quite the wordsmith. In fact, a lot of people opposed Jesus in his day. That may not be shocking, of course. There were these religious leaders, there were keepers of the law, and Jesus sort of just infuriated them because he just stepped out of tune with them, and they thought, we got this thing right, and there was just a lot of friction there. And so they would come against him, and what they would try to do over and over again is they would try to trap him in his words. They would try to get him caught in his own words. And you know what? It never worked, because Jesus was a master of words. He never got trapped in his own words. So if you have somebody at that type of level who doesn't, you know, you can't trap in their words, they're very succinct, they are master of words, then I think it's important to not only look at what they do say, but you have to kind of consider what they don't say. You have to say, because that's what we do, and that's the friction in a lot of our relationships. If we're honest, what we do a lot of times is we just assume there's a meaning behind a meaning, right? We hear people say something, we go, I know what you said, but I know you meant this. You know, right? And so let's just look at, let's take Jesus for what he's saying here. And this is what he starts with. He says, if your brother, you know what? Let's not go any further than that. He says, if you have a Bible and you're open to that passage, you should circle the word if, like infinitely. If. Because interestingly enough, Jesus doesn't say, when your brother or sister offends you, which surely he knew. I mean, he wouldn't be addressing the issue if he didn't know that there was going to be tension between you and others, right? But he doesn't say when. He says, if your brother or sister offends you, i.e., just because you feel offended doesn't necessarily mean there's been an offense. You get that? Just because you're feeling offended doesn't necessarily mean there's been an offense. Are you still open to the idea that maybe you just have it wrong? Is that even possible? Maybe there's been no offense at all. And we all know what this sounds like, right? I mean, we know, because scientifically we even know this. We know that we only use about 10% of our brains. Do you know that? We only use about 10% of our brains, which I think leaves 90% of space for that 10% to run all over if it wants to. Do you know what I mean? And you know the brain will run. I mean, the mind will run. Am I the only one? The mind will run. Like, talk about miles. The mind will run way off. And it sounds like this. I mean, you know what it's like. Make that phone call. Voicemail. That's the second voicemail this week. They always take my calls. I mean, what's up with that? You see what's happening? The mind is off. Go. You know, it's gone. And it's like, That's weird. They always say my car. Oh, hey, hey, it's me, Throb. What's up? Just leaving you another message. Because, you know, I called earlier in the week and I left one other message, but I haven't heard from you, which is weird. So call me back, you know, when you get a chance, because this is my second message. So call me. Bye. Click. You know, like that kind of deal. And then you're sitting there and you're like, gosh, wow, it's been 22 minutes. No callback. What's up? That's weird. No callback. They always call. They take my call and now they're not calling. You know what? There was that thing a couple weeks ago. That day we were walking by each other at the venue, and I was all peppy. I was all like, hey, what's up? And they were all like, what's up, man? Yeah, what's up? Is there something going on? Mm-hmm. And they've been wearing a lot of yellow lately, and they know I can't stand yellow. Mm-hmm. That cannot be a coincidence. I know I'm being a little absurd, but you know it's right, right? You know what the head will do? The head will run. The mind will run. You will chase everything. We all do it. Come on, if you tell me you don't do that, you lie. The head is full of space, and you will just run, and you will take something, and you will just go with it. And you will take one little incident, and you will turn it into something cataclysmic, and you will create strife often where there's really no strife. Because isn't it all still just possible that they didn't get your email? I mean, emails still do get lost in cyberspace, right? I mean, it does happen. It's rare, sure. But it'll happen. Isn't it all possible that maybe they're just having a terrible bad day? So that when you caught them and you were all jovial, hey, what's up? And they're like, hey, what's up? Maybe something is going on in their life. Maybe they got some bad news. Maybe they had something happen. Maybe they're having their own relational friction with a spouse or a boyfriend, girlfriend, or whatever. The kids are something, they're struggling. Maybe it's not about you. Maybe it's actually about them and they're struggling with something and you ought to be more concerned with them, but you can't quite get there because you're too concerned with yourself. Listen, I'm not preaching at you. I'm preaching at me. I do this all the time. I will just run with stuff, stupid stuff. And I'll just make it into a deal when it wasn't a deal to begin with. This is what we do. We will just chase something. We will hunt. We will hunt for trouble. That's what we are. We're hunters of trouble. There you go. That's what we are. Mm-hmm. So this is what Jesus has to say for us. He says, if... And again, you're open to the idea that there may not have been an offense. You might feel offended, but there may not have been an offense. If your brother or sister sins against you, go and show him his fault just between the two of you. So you're supposed to go. I'm feeling offended. I feel like there's a riff. I feel like I got a cold shoulder. I feel like something's off. Something is askew. Something is amiss here. And I'm feeling something. And Jesus would suggest I should go straight to that person. But that doesn't normally happen, does it? Can I get a couple volunteers? Actually, I'm not going to have you sing, I swear. I just need two physical creatures up here to illustrate something. Yes, I called you a creature. Both of you, come on. This is great. Thank you. Give it up. Yes. Sweet. All right, so guys, I'm not even going to go over your names. I might accidentally say them because I know you. But this will be person A, okay? There you go, person A. Woo! I feel like a Price is Right girl. Yeah, person B, over here, sir. And I will represent person C, all right? So here we go, person A, B, and C. Now what happens is person A has one of those things going on with person B. There is something that happens, and there's some friction, there's some tension, maybe a cold shoulder, maybe something's askew, maybe she gets pushed, I don't know. Nice. And so, anyway, so person A has sort of something going with person B. According to Jesus, what should person A do? Go to person B. Go straight to, do not pass go, do not collect to, just go right to person B. But that doesn't happen, does it? What does person A most likely do? She comes over to me. Come on, person A. And person A and person C, you are going to be in big trouble. You guys live together. So person A comes to person C, and she might strike up a conversation with me like that. Mm-hmm, you know what? Have you been noticing person B? B is all like, give me the cold shoulder and all that. Now, I have one of two responses that I can have to person A in this moment. I could either say, one, I could say, you know what? I don't really know, and I'm not really sure you should be talking to me about this. You should probably just go straight to person B, which can create more friction because person A could then strike this pose. Oh, so you're taking B's side. Oh, so you're taking his side. I didn't say, no, you're taking his side. You see, you know how that goes, right? And I didn't even take a side. I was just like, I think you just go straight to the source. I'm trying to be like Jesus. But anyway, so now person A is angry now, that has a rift with now both B and C, and then she will go find person D somewhere out there, maybe you, and start talking to you about us. You see how this gets really weird quick, right? That's what happens, right? And then person B, sensing tension between person A and themselves, maybe they, but maybe not even thinking that I'm involved, person B comes to me as person C and just starts, hey, what's up? And then I start giving person B the cold shoulder. Because I'm like, yeah, I know what you did to person B. Hey, And I get a little of that too. Go. And so now person B has a riff with both A and C, you see? And now B goes to find D out there somewhere and starts talking about A and C. You see how this is unbelievable. You see how this can just wreck office relationships. And you see how this can just tear neighborhoods apart. Because it's like this gossip chain starts. And I would suggest that gossip is verbal pornography. It's like you want the stimulation without any of the commitment. You know what I mean? And that's what happens. And it just starts, and it just starts running a trail. So give it up. You guys should be ashamed of yourself for not going straight to the source, by the way. So what I would argue today is that for most of us, what we're guilty of is we're guilty of something I would call premature triangulation. I just said that. It's all right. Let it out. Let that breathe. Yeah. We're premature triangulators. We involve a third party way too soon. Because what Jesus says we should do is we should, if we have a rift with a person, we should go straight to that person. And we should find out even if there's any offense there to begin with. We should be open to the idea that there may not even be an offense. We should probably go in thinking maybe something's troubling them. We should go from the mentality of, oh, I know what they're thinking too. You know, I wonder what they're thinking. I wonder if they're all right. I mean, that's how we should go in. And then we should go to the person directly and just say, hey, are we cool? I mean, I just kind of sense them. Is everything all right? Are you doing okay? And then, you know, go from there. Don't triangulate too quickly. There is a time for that, though. Because, like, look what he says. Jesus says, If your brother or sister sins against you, go and show him his fault just between the two of you. If he listens to you, again, Jesus, very wise, if he listens to you, you have won your brother over. And this is listens like in the holistic sense of listens and agrees. If they do that, then you've won them back over. And you've won, I mean, there's something strong there that happens. But he knows that they may not respond well. It's another if. If they listen and agree. Because what often happens, and we kind of know this to be true in life too, right? Say I try to go the right path. Say I feel a rift between someone or a divide or something has just come up and I go straight to that person and I say, hey, is everything cool? I mean, you know, it doesn't mean that that person's going to receive it well, right? Right? They might have their walls up, you know, they might have their claws out. They might get back, because, you know, people do this, right? I mean, you've probably never seen this before, but sometimes when people get presented with some type of friction, they almost become like caged animals. It's like they go back in a corner and get like, oh, I'm coming for you. You know, I mean, I'm sure you've never seen this. But they'll do, because once they sense friction, they don't know how to handle it, so they'll just go, oh, I'm coming. And you know what they'll say? They'll say things like this, you're always so judgmental. Which is the funniest statement in the world, because you can't say to somebody, you're so judgmental, without judging them. I mean, it just totally falls apart on itself. You're so judgmental. I'm not, but you're so judgmental. Isn't that funny? It's kind of like when people, I like this one too, when people go, oh, I hate them, they're so opinionated. That in and of itself is an opinion, you understand, right? I mean, that's a freebie right there for you. Opinion, yeah. But people don't always respond well. So you can be trying to do the right thing. You can say, I'm concerned. And they can get a little bowed up. They can get a little, what? And they can come at you. And that will create often more tension. More tension. So Jesus has words for us here. He says, so if this happens, if he listens to you, you've won your brother over. But if he will not listen, take one or two others along so that every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. And here, let's just be frank. Most of us hate this step. Because here's what Jesus is suggesting. He's saying, if you've gone to the person and you've tried to deal with it directly, and they got bowed up, for whatever reason, they didn't receive it well, and you find out, you know, there really is an offense, or they didn't handle it well, and it's creating more friction, what you need to do is go find a truth teller. Go find a third party that would have no reason to favor either of you, who could just listen to it. Go find one or two others that are truth tellers. But the truth is, we hate this step because most of us hate truth tellers. We don't like truth tellers. What we like is we just like people to tell us we're right. Don't tell me the truth. Just tell me I'm right. I want to win the fight. I'm in a conflict. I want to be the winner. And we don't like a truth teller. Honestly, we don't. We don't like somebody who's, you know, impartial. We like partial. Come to my part. Take up my part. That's what we like. But Jesus says, go get a truth teller or two. Somebody who would have no reason to side with either one that would hear the matter. And here's what we don't like about truth tellers. There's a couple of things I think we don't like about truth tellers. We don't like those type of people in this sort of situation. Here's why I think we don't like them. Because we know that they know there's two sides to every story. And we don't care about the other side of the story. I mean, let's just be honest. We care about our side of the story. But we know a truth teller knows there's two sides of every story. We also know that a truth teller normally knows this type of person who's in the position to be impartial, to kind of look at both views. What we know about them is that they probably know that it's really rare in these incidences where one person is 100% wrong and the other person is 100% right. It's really rare. I mean, yes, there are times when somebody clearly has done something offensive and someone might say, hey, I know they responded wrong, but seriously, you know what you did, right? I mean, there's clearly those moments. But in most moments, in most friction, there's very rarely 100% wrong and 100% right, and we know that. And we don't want them to talk about our junk. We just want them to get them, go, do your thing. Yeah, but we know they don't do that. That if they're really a truth teller, they'll sit and listen and go, hey, I think there's some friction here, but I mean, are you sure? And this is a difficult, painful, and yet necessary step. When I was in school, when I was in like junior high, there was a guy named Bobby who sat like not in the row next to me, one back, and he said something very ugly to me. He called me an ugly name, and I just shot off with "Yo mama," thinking everybody says "Yo mama," right? But he got really offended, and he got up and he punched me right in the face. That's what he did. And so I kind of came out of my desk, and I lunged back at him because I wasn't really like the turn your other cheek guy at that point. You know, I was like, you hit my other cheek. That's not good advice. So I jump at him just in time for my English teacher to walk in and see me lunging at him. So you know who got suspended, right? Me. And so I go home and tell my mom about it. My mom's like, mm-mm. You know, she gets involved. She starts calling principals, and then his mom gets involved, and we have this big meeting with moms. That's not good. And they start, woo-hoo, and the moms are going off. But we have this guy who actually did a really good job of mediating. And while our moms are kind of going at it, Bobby and I are like, yeah, it was kind of dumb, wasn't it? And we become friends. And we end up being thick as thieves the rest of the year. I mean, seriously, and we would joke about it. You remember having English class? I said, your mom, ha-ha. It was just funny. And the funny thing was is that the relationship was almost stronger as a result of the friction. We actually got through the friction, and the friction became almost like this glue that was like holding us. And I have experienced that truth over and over again in my life. That sometimes it's like a relationship needs attention to overcome because you don't have a friend until you've gone through something with them. You know what I mean? When you've survived something, then you got a relationship. I mean, that's when you got something. It's the tension. And Jesus would suggest that you could get through this tension, that we could live in such a way that we could go through tension and the cords start to become stronger. Listen to where he goes from here. He'll say, "But if you will not listen, take one or two others along, so every matter may be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church." Now, I know some of you are thinking like, what? You're going to bring people right up here and be like, let's take a vote. How many of you with person A? Person B? You're out. You know, no, we would never do that. That would be ridiculous. Why would we bring people in front of everybody? Some churches do that, though, by the way. It's not very healthy. But here's the thing. I think what Jesus is saying is, what you need to do at this point, if you've gone to the person, if you've approached them, and that didn't go well, and there was an offense, and now it's worse than ever, and you got a truth teller, sit in and say, let's look at both sides of the story. There's two sides of a story, and that doesn't go well. Then you find some people, and he recommends a church, because here's the thing. He says, find people who believe that redemption is possible. Find a couple of people who believe that relationships can be healed. That friction doesn't mean termination. It means there's a possibility for healing. Find people who actually believe that what Jesus accomplished when he came to the earth by sacrificing himself for us was that not only could we be restored to God, not only could we be restored and have a relationship with God again, but we could also be restored unto one another, that we could come together and have new relationships that were stronger than ever, the types of relationships that could survive conflict, the types of relationships where you could have friction and work it out. The type of people who believe in healing, the type of people who believe that redemption is possible in every relationship. Find a couple of those people, and you might say, but do you find those people at church? It's a good question. I think we have some people here like that. You might go to leadership, you might be on a ministry team, you might be even in a microgroup, you might say, I know there's some people here that really do believe that, and I believe they could help us and heal this. I believe it's possible, at least. And here's the big thing. So Jesus gets to this. And this is the part we wanted all the way from the beginning, if we're honest. Jesus works all the way through these steps. Okay, go to them. If they listen, you've won them over. If not, all right, go get a truth teller or two. Get them to mediate, sit down with you. If that doesn't work, go find people who believe in redemption and healing and see if they can't help you work towards resolution. And then he says this. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen even to the church, treat him as you would a pagan or a tax collector. Finally, I get to terminate the relationship and not have to feel bad about it. I just, you're out. I've done everything I can do. You're out. Right? Isn't that what we want from the beginning? Not so fast. Because the author of the statement is Jesus. And you have to consider the author of the statement. And what Jesus says is, if you've gone through all these steps, if you've done everything in your power, you went directly to the source, it got worse. You went and got truth tellers, it got worse. You tried to find people who believed in redemption, who believed that this was possible to heal this relationship, and that didn't work. Then treat them like a pagan or a tax collector. You then have to ask yourself, how did the person who said the statement treat pagans and tax collectors? Do you know that the number one complaint levied against Jesus by the religious leaders of his day and by the keepers of the law, the beef that they had with him, do you know what they would say about him? They would say, he is a friend to sinners and tax collectors. He is a friend. So Jesus takes us through this incredible thing. Go to him, doesn't work. Truth teller, doesn't work. Church, people redeeming redemption, doesn't work. Then treat them like a pagan or a tax collector, and i.e. be their friend. Has the relationship changed? Absolutely. You've journeyed away with them. Has it changed? Has it gone back? Mm-hmm. But then we just receive them and say, at this point, I just love you the way you are. I love you for who you are. I've done everything I can do. And when you know in your heart, man, I've done everything I can do, I believed that this relationship could be restored. I've done everything I could do to restore the relationship. There's nothing more I can do. You can let it go. You know what this is called? Forgiveness. These are the steps of forgiveness. Just don't take a shortcut. And that's what people will do. Oh, I just have to forgive them. I just know I have to forgive them. Yeah, like that works. You got to work it out. You got to be willing to get in and get in journey with the person, dig through it. And then when you know, man, I've done everything I can do, you can let it go. There was this girl who came to our church who, and there's a couple people like this in my life, believe it or not, as a leader in a church, I've had this happen to me on numerous occasions, that there's a couple people who literally hate me now because of a decision I made in the church. I literally get emails from a couple people about once a year saying, I hope you die, I hope God kills you, you ruined my life, over a decision I made in the church. It's the craziest thing. One of them I saw out one night about 2.5 years ago, right before we moved to Vegas, and I saw her out at a concert, and I saw her, and I thought time had gone by, that, and I had done everything I could do. I went through all the things, and I let it go, and I thought, man, surely enough time has gone by. Bygones are bygones by now. And I saw her, and I said, hey, how are you? And you know, she saw me, and I was like, uh-oh, you know. And she said something to me that I cannot repeat. See me personally, I'll tell you. But no, but she said something to me, and I was really like, holy cow. And do you know that my heart was actually filled with sympathy? Do you know what I actually thought? I thought, oh my gosh, how incredibly bad for you that you are still holding this. There's this quote that I love that says, bitterness is the poison you swallow hoping the other guy dies. And I just felt sympathy for her. I just thought, you know what? I think the very fact that she saw me here has ruined her entire day, probably her week. She's going to go home. She's probably stewing. I could only imagine that night. She was like, oh, I hate that. And I went home and went to sleep. I wasn't losing sleep. But she was. Because when you've done everything you can do, you can let it go and you can forgive. And there's that moment of like, yeah, forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do, where you could just say, I don't necessarily need to hear I'm sorry. Just let it go. But don't take a shortcut. It is not good. Healing is possible. So last week we did a song. Oh, by the way, there is one more thing I want to tell you. I'm sorry. The disciples got this when Jesus said it. They got it. Because I want to show you this passage. Peter, this very verbose disciple, says to Jesus, then Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother when he sins against me? And he said, up to 7 times? And Jesus said, I tell you, not 7 times, but 77 times. It could also be 70 times 7, which is a lot. And for Peter, he got it. And I think what he was saying, I think he thought he was being magnanimous. I think he thought, because the maximum of the day for Jews was that you would forgive up to 3 times, and that was it, then you cut them loose. So I think Peter was saying, should I do like 7? That's got to be good, right? And Jesus said, no, way more. It's not hurting them, it's hurting you. It is possible. And so like I said, last week we did this communion song, this time where we do reflection, a song called Dirty and Left Out. And what I suggested was that maybe you could really relate to that song, because maybe you might be thinking, man, if you only knew all the terrible things I've been a part of or that I'm currently involved with, you would not welcome me. If you only knew how I never feel included in anything and how I've left parties early and I want to get out of here, and you wouldn't include me. And we talked about how Jesus created this place, this space called the Kingdom of God, where people were welcome in it, regardless of their history and past, and that they could be included because of the work he accomplished. It's an incredible thing. And so as we move into that time today, the band's going to come up, and we're going to play that song again, Dirty and Left Out. And maybe you would have, like, your own confession time right now, like just you in your chair with God, and say, man, God, if I'm being honest, I've left early on relationships. I checked out on relationships way too prematurely. I was looking for a reason to terminate all along. I wasn't going in thinking, I want to heal it. So communion will be available. I'm going to pray. And then you can just make use of the time however you like. So God, we are inordinately grateful for Jesus, who, in giving his body and blood, made a way for us to not only be restored to you, God, but that we had hope that we could be restored to one another, that we could live in new community in a way that was so strong that we could deal with the junk of life and come through it stronger than ever before. God, thank you that you've made that way. And I pray that as we enter into this time of reflection, God, that we would just sense the work that you want to do in us so that we can move forward free from the tyranny of bitterness. And we pray in the name of Jesus. Amen.